All right, we told you guys earlier that we sat down with Travis Demers, radio play-by-play voice of the Portland Trail Blazers, a guy who I've known for about a decade now. Just a really, really good dude in the industry and super happy for his success. We chatted with Travis earlier tonight about his career, how he got to where he is now, where he started, how he kind of continued the climb up to being an NBA play-by-play voice, the current state of the media industry as well. He had some good thoughts there. And then we asked him, of course, a couple Blazers questions at the end, kind of previewing this season in general. So here we go, our chat with Travis Demers. All right, and as promised, joining us now, the Portland Trail Blazers play-by-play voice, Travis Demers, a guy who I've known for a long time now, since my days interning with 1080 The Fan and his days back on that station. Now he's got a new station and a new job as he's recently become the Blazers play-by-play voice. Travis, thanks for being here, man.
Yeah, always, guys. Good to talk to you.
One of the things we do on this show is break down folks who are or sports media veterans who have an established career and just ask them kind of how they got to that point. A lot of our audience really enjoys hearing about kind of how you rise to a prominent position in the sports media landscape. So let's start with you. I know a bit about your background, but just if you could, I mean, just, you know, like a minute or two summary of just kind of how you got to where you are.
Man, that could take a while. You know what this business is like, man. So I grew up in New York and I went to college at Long Island University. And when I was there, I did play-by-play. I hosted shows, a lot of radio. I did some TV too, but mostly radio. And when I was still in college, my junior year, I interned at ABC Sports Radio. I don't know if you know what the ABC Sports Call is, but I was producing that, you know, kind of that audio feed. And then I did that again my senior year, and they hired me, you know, to be, you know, a freelancer, basically three nights a week doing the overnight shift doing that. But I wanted to be on the air, so I sent out my tapes everywhere. I got offered a couple of jobs, and the one that I took was out in Astoria doing high school football and basketball for Seaside, Warrington, Iwako, Napa, these little towns out on the coast for $50 a week. And that's what I moved out to the Northwest for, sight unseen, when I was 21. And from there, I started, you know, doing some board op shifts at 1080 The Fan and just kind of worked my way up there to, you know, I was finally hosting. Did play-by-play. I did traffic for Channel 2. I mean, I did all kinds of stuff. I had, you know, side jobs working, you know, at Champ Sports and doing construction and all this other stuff. Then I took a job at Sirius XM doing updates and hosting a show once a week on the Sirius XM College Sports Channel. I was there for about a year and a half, and then The Fan called me back and asked me to come back and do the midday show with Josh Wilcox. So I did that for a couple of years, and then they decided to make some changes. They let me go in 2014. And I was doing everything to make some money here and there. I was working up at Emerald Downs doing the horse racing stuff. I worked doing horse racing at Portland Meadows. I was coaching high school baseball. And then finally, I got caught on with Rip City Radio. I was also doing some play-by-play for the University of Portland at the time, baseball, basketball, men's and women's basketball. And then, man, a few years ago, I got a call from the Blazers saying, hey, we need somebody to fill in tomorrow night calling the last preseason game against Maccabi Haifa. And you can jump in with a comment. Go ahead.
I just want to say that was more so for Preston, but that's such an incredible background. Preston, I want to get your take on this too. I think Travis might be the biggest industry vet that we've interviewed thus far. Did you hear when you talked about how he had construction jobs and also working at Champs and making $50 a week to call high school football and basketball? That takes the cake for me, man. That takes the cake by far of anyone that we've interviewed to get to where they've gotten to this point.
Oh, dude. The thing is, I'd heard that before, so that's why I didn't just immediately go, wow, what a grind. But I'm sure our audience goes, man, you were laying brick and working some HVAC jobs to make it through.
I was doing demo on roofing and stuff, and I got a job. I was working at Champ Sports at the Lloyd Center. This was in 2003. And it was Melo LeBron's rookie year. And we sold so many Carmelo Anthony Nuggets jerseys and LeBron Cavs jerseys. Nobody really wanted to buy the Dwayne Wade Heat jerseys. And I remember Travis Outlaw came in one time and bought a Barry Sanders Oklahoma State jersey. But when I was out of work in that period before I started at Rip City Radio, I called up the University of Portland and I said, hey, is anybody calling your baseball games? They said, no. I'm like, okay, well, I want to get some baseball tape. Can I come call your games? Like, well, we can't pay you anything. Whatever. I want to get some tape. So I did that for that spring for free. I probably did 15, 16 games. And then that fall, they needed someone to do their TV broadcasts for men's and women's basketball and eventually baseball. So they called me. Hell yeah, I'll do it. And that led to doing some hops games and things like that. But with the Blazers stuff in 2017, like I was saying, they called me and said, we need somebody to fill in tomorrow night calling a game against Maccabi Haifa. My first thought was, what? You want me to call a Trailblazers game? Yeah, I think I can fit that into my schedule. And that was the only game that I called that year. The following year, they said, Brian Wheeler's having some health issues. We need you to fill in some more games, and it's going to be a lot more. And I ended up doing 57 games that year. And then they decided to make a change, and I got the job. That's how I'm here.
So that was an amazing summary there.
A little longer than a minute. Sorry about that.
No, but I mean, that's about as good as you could have done while also being descriptive. I mean, is that kind of what it takes? I mean, to all of our buddies out there who want to be in the game, or guys like myself who have been in the game and are still in the game. I mean, to make it to that point, I mean, there's no path, as everyone always says in this business, right? But I mean, just based off your own experience as a guy who's been in the game for a decade and a half, 2 decades, I mean, is that kind of a, I guess maybe not a path that I can't say like you would maybe recommend for sure, but like, I mean, is that just, that's kind of a, I guess I'm asking you to kind of reassure the audience that that's not like, that's kind of how it goes in this business. And Tony and I say that a lot, but it's important hearing it from you too.
It can be, it doesn't have to be, right? Like a lot of it's timing, right? There are so many great play-by-play announcers across the country doing small college stuff that are just never going to get the chance because they're not in the right place at the right time. For me, it was literally about being in the right place at the right time and making the most of the opportunity. I mean, I treated that preseason game that nobody listened to against Maccabi Haifa like it was game 7 of the finals. And it was basically an audition. And if I didn't do well, I would never have gotten a call back the following year to fill in. So yes, it's definitely a grind, and you don't just look, I don't mean this in any disrespect to Noah Eagle, but being Noah Eagle, the son of Ian Eagle, you're going to get looked at. Now, he is phenomenal. If you listen to him, he does not sound like he's 23 years old. He is terrific, but he doesn't get looked at the same way if he's not Ian Eagle's son. And I really don't mean any disrespect by that. He's absolutely deserving of having that job. But there are a lot of people that are deserving of having jobs like that are never going to get that opportunity. It took me 16 years of being in the business before somebody looked at me and said, we're willing to give you an opportunity to fill in. I would never have gotten this job in a million years if I didn't have that opportunity to fill in already and build some credibility. So for some people, it's doing G League. There's the minor league baseball path. If you want to do baseball, the same thing with hockey. There are a million different paths that you can take, but really there is a ton of luck and a lot of it's timing.
You mean the Clippers didn't just call up a professor at Syracuse and just say, hey, you guys got any undergrads that maybe like want a little something out here?
I don't think it worked.
Yes, I mean, you got anyone available? It might looking for work.
That was
a salty comment by me.
If there was one school that call might go to, it's probably Syracuse. But right. I don't think it worked out that way.
Right, I'm with you, Tony.
Travis, that's, again, an incredible background. I think that gives a lot of context to our viewers in terms of kind of the grind that you would have to go through to get to a premier spot within the sports media industry. And I don't mean any disrespect when I ask this question, but was there ever a time where you're looking at your journey, as you described, you're not making a ton of money, opportunities are slim, that and you have responsibilities and you're getting older, that you're looking at yourself in the mirror and thinking, is this a feasible thing for me to continue to do?
Yeah. Yeah. Many times. I mean, my first job that had benefits, I was 30. So it was, and I was making, I wasn't making a ton of money doing that. That was the first job that I had benefits. And when I got laid off from the Fan in 2014, it took me almost a year to get another job. And when I got that job, it was part-time. I mean, I was doing a show every day, but they were paying me part time and it wasn't enough to live. And in between, I was applying to jobs all over the country. I mean, I sent a tape out to a sports station in Des Moines, Iowa. And I'm like, okay, I'm coming from Portland. I've been on the air for years. I got a chip. They never called me back.
Yeah.
So when that happened, it's like, man, am I not even good enough for Des Moines? And no disrespect to Des Moines, but it's, you know, it's not a top 25 market. So yeah, there were plenty of times where I wondered, you know, where this was going to lead. Because I've done some other things here and there, but if I wasn't doing this, I have no idea what I'd be doing. I'm not qualified to do anything else.
I love just the genuine response. I think a lot of us have gone through that. I know, you know, it's part of the biz to apply everywhere. That's what you have to do. You can't just apply to three spots and be like, all right, sweet, one of these is going to call me back. That's not how it works. That was me summer out of my senior year. Just I applied to 50, 60, 70 jobs, much like you were talking about there. We want to ask you about the Blazers, and we know your time is limited. So we'd like to transition. Okay, we like to transition there. We know about the Rocco signing, Derek Jones Jr. I've read, you know, some quick articles. Obviously, the Blazers are trying to get better defensively. I think the stat was they were third in offensive efficiency last year and 27th in defensive efficiency. What's your top Trailblazers storyline entering this season?
Defense. I mean, it's clearly defense. To your point, as I've got all my little notes here cut up to glue onto my board, I've got that note right here with the offensive and defensive efficiencies for both teams. And yeah, the Blazers were third last year in offense and 27th in defense. That's not good enough, right? Their perimeter defense wasn't good enough. The pick and roll defense wasn't good enough. Their help defense wasn't good enough. And they addressed that. They addressed that with Robert Covington, who was a very good defender. He was first team all defense a couple years ago. And with Derek Jones Jr., he is long, he's aggressive. He's talked about wanting to be the defensive player of the year. That kind of attitude is exactly what they need. Gary Trent Jr. off the bench is a very good defender. Rodney Hood is a pretty good defender. So they have personnel that are going to be getting serious minutes on this team that are very good defenders. And that alone will help, but also Terry Stotts changing things up to best use those guys. And he's already talked about that. We saw it early on in the first preseason game against Sacramento. And really, this team is good enough to be top five in offensive efficiency again. But even if they're middle of the pack in defensive efficiency, we're talking about a dramatically improved team.
And that's a good point. I think that they did address that huge issue with some signings, but the big picture, and this is what Chief and I always talk about for the Blazers, is they're kind of stuck in no man's land, not bad enough to get a top pick, not good enough to really contend for a title. So what do they have to do with that in mind, right, Travis? I mean, this might be a tough question to ask you, seeing as how you work in-house for the Blazers, but what in your eyes would get them over that hump? It's a big hump, to be fair, to be able to contend for a title with some of the elite teams in the NBA.
Right. And it's a good question. It's a fair point because it's, you know, who's going to beat the Lakers? Who's going to beat the Clippers? With COVID this year, anything can happen. Anything. It could be the difference between home court advantage in the conference finals, which could end up going a long way, especially if fans are back in the building in June or July when that's going on. And if the Lakers decide to rest Anthony Davis and LeBron James early in the year because it's been 2.5 months since they played, maybe they're not the one seed. Maybe they're the three seed or the four seed, and the Blazers are ahead of them. Nobody expected the Clippers to lose up 3-1 to Denver last year. And in the Eastern Conference, Milwaukee was clearly the best team. And Boston was very good. People thought Philadelphia was very good. No one had Miami as the five seed reaching the finals. And I'm not saying that's what the Blazers are going to do, that this team is going to reach the finals. But I think this team is good enough to be close. And sometimes being close, things can break your way. But what it also means that because they didn't go out and really hamper themselves with long-term contracts, a lot of those pieces are movable. They don't have a draft pick next year, first-round pick, but they have future first-round picks. They have young players. There are a lot of things that Neil O'Shea can do and be creative to upgrade the roster further if the opportunity comes. And really, know, you have a superstar, arguably the best point guard in the league in Damian Lillard. You have one of the better shooting guards in the league in CJ McCollum. You have defensive players who can shoot at the wing positions. And Yusuf Nurkic, who, once everything starts to fall into place for him, can do a little bit of everything. The difference between this Blazers team and Blazers teams in the past is depth. Because if you think about it, coming off the bench, now with Gary Trent Jr. and his, you know, blossoming game, Carmelo Anthony now is going to be going up against second-team guys instead of starters. Enes Kanter. Rodney Hood is coming off the bench. Now, when Zach Collins, he'll be coming off the bench. I mean, Harry Giles, who was awesome the first two preseason games, is probably your 11th man, 12th man. Didn't even mention Anthony Simons yet. So in a year when COVID is definitely going to affect games that are being played, and when you have more three games in four nights and more back-to-backs and 72 games condensed into basically a month shorter season, having depth is going to separate the Blazers from teams that don't have depth. Denver has depth. The Clippers don't have as much depth as they did. The Lakers have a decent amount of depth. I don't think Utah has a ton of depth. Houston doesn't have any depth. So when, you know, when you talk about attrition, it's going to happen. And I think the Blazers are as well equipped to handle that as anybody in the West.
I think Portland's going to be a lot better this year than they were last year. I mean, for people who weren't paying attention, Portland was so injured last year. I mean, obviously they didn't have Nurk. They didn't have Zach. Even CJ was injured at times. I mean, it was Dame. That's why Dame's numbers were as historic as they were for that month or two stretch around January, is he was getting the Harden usage treatment, and he was playing extremely well. I mean, you know, I don't remember exactly what the stats were, but there was that stretch where he averaged like 45 a game on 45% shooting from three. I'm going to talk myself into Derek Jones Jr. being the best version of himself. I think Melo in a much more limited role will be really good. I think Robert Covington will be really good. I am very concerned about Zach Collins. I don't know what is going on with Zach Collins. I mean, we know he's like, I think he's coming back from an ankle injury. He had a back surgery last year. Like, this was a guy that the Blazers used a lottery pick on. And I love, like, every time he's out there, it's never about his like effort or tenaciousness. He brings that tough guy mantra to the table. I mean, he's about that life, as they say. I mean, he's down to throw elbows at people's faces, but he just can't stay on the floor either because he's not healthy or because he's in foul trouble. And I want, don't get me wrong, like, I want the best for him, but where are we? Like, where is Zach Collins right now in his development, in his readiness, in his availability, and all of that?
Well, so I don't know if you saw this, but the Blazers didn't pick up his option for next year.
Yeah,
so
I saw that.
He's going to be a restricted free agent. And what they're basically saying to him is, we can't commit the dollars to you for next year. You've got to go out and prove it this year. And if somebody else offers him money and they want to keep him, he's restricted and they can. He just turned 23 years old a month ago. And he's still a really, really young guy. And in terms of that intensity, I've seen him in pregame warmups like 2 hours before the game for the last 2 years. I've never seen somebody as intense in pregame warmups as Zach Collins is. He wants to be out there. That dude is intense. He loves basketball. I have no doubt that his work ethic is as solid as it could possibly be. But he's had injuries. The injury last year against Dallas, you know, was a freak injury where he dislocates his shoulder and then he doesn't play again, you know, basically for the rest of the year until the bubble. And then he hurts his ankle. And, yeah, the injuries have been there. You know, 2 years ago he played 77 games. And nobody really wants to talk about that. He wasn't banged up his rookie year. He just didn't play a whole lot. And he played 66 games because he was able to get on the floor because he was a good defensive player. And then year two, he plays 77 games. Year three, plays three games, gets hurt, plays eight games in the bubble, and that's that. He gets hurt again. So the idea that Zach has had this crazy injury history, really, it was 1 year where he was really banged up. So is 1 year with a shoulder injury and an ankle injury and a back injury, are those things enough to say, oh, this guy doesn't have a chance? He's 23 years old. I'm cautiously optimistic because, like you, the things that I've seen on the floor, especially, I mean, you go back to that playoff series against Denver, and they don't win that series without some of the things that he does in game six. I mean, him and Rodney Hood carried the Blazers in game six, and they don't win that game. They don't win that series if he doesn't do what he did.
but can he stay on the floor? And that's the question. There's still some developmental things he needs to work on offensively. And staying out of foul trouble, like you mentioned, is a big key for him. I think he just needs reps. And hopefully mid-January, he's going to be able to get those reps. And he's going to have to earn his way back into the rotation. And I think he will.
Trav, switching up here, I got something light for you.
Sure.
Give me one of your best, memories from either it could be a road trip or any sort of travel experience that you have with the Blazers. Something along those lines where you look back and say, like, damn, that was a pretty cool or a pretty funny or a pretty interesting moment.
Honestly, I have a ton in less than 2 years of doing it. For me personally, growing up in New York, getting to call a game at Madison Square Garden was like one of the highlights of my life. Man, I grew up going to MSG and watching the Knicks, and when I was a month into the first year I was filling in, I get to go to Madison Square Garden and walk out onto the floor and look around. And, as a Knicks fan, be like, oh, that's where Patrick Ewing missed the shot in 95 that my friends keep sending me memes of that I saw on TV when I was 13 years old. That was awesome. And then when I went back there on New Year's Day the following year, I'm walking out there and there's John Starks like walking right by me. I don't get starstruck. Because I've been around it for so long, but there are some guys that you grew up watching that you don't see because they're not around the game anymore. And John Starks was one of those guys. And I thought that was really cool. But I've gotten to know a lot of the people on the crew for the Blazers. The guys behind the scenes with TV, and a very good friend of mine travels with the team. A guy that I've known for over 10 years, John McConnell. And we hang out, we go to Disney World and Disneyland. His wife, Jamie Hudson, covers the team for NBC Sports Northwest. So she travels and she's a great friend of mine. So we do a lot of things together. It's fun, staying in the hotels, being on the team plane, things like that. It's fun. It's tough sometimes because I have two little kids and, missing them and FaceTiming and missing my wife, that can be a challenge, but it's fun. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to keep it with something light here. We ask our sports media folks for their favorite industry moment and oftentimes, or funniest industry moment. And oftentimes that turns into like, we talk with a lot of reporters. So that'll turn into like a hilarious press conference moment or a bad question with you as a play-by-play guy. And I mean, you've obviously done it all. You hosted shows too. So it could be some, like one time, maybe you're something happened on air during a Rip City Drive show or whatever the case. But do you have any kind of funny industry moment that sticks out to you?
There are a few that stick out.
You can even throw it back to the Wilcox days.
Yeah, there are a few. Okay. So, I'll go back to my first year as a stringer, and my job was just to go in the locker room and get audio. And I'm in the Lakers locker room, last game of the season. I guess it was my second year. Lakers didn't make the playoffs that year, 2005. And after the game, I'm in the locker room, and there's 10 people or so around Kobe Bryant. And I'm standing right next to him, and I ask him a question. And I'm like 22, 23 years old. And he puts his hand on my shoulder and just starts kind of like – he can tell I was about as nervous as could possibly. I mean, this is Kobe, right? And he just kind of like, it was a moment, it was like, I don't want to get cheesy with it, but it was a moment where he's like, I could just tell he's like, it's okay. I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. And I felt comfortable, and it was weird, not in the context of, oh my God, he touched me, that's weird. It's like, here's me, some little pissant reporter, asking Kobe Bryant a question. He can tell that I'm probably gonna need to change my pants afterwards. And he did what he could do to make me feel more comfortable asking him a question. And that was pretty cool.
Man, that's an awesome moment. What year was that? You remember?
I think it was 2005.
Okay.
I think it was 2005. It would have been the last game of the season. The Blazers, I believe, won that game, and the Lakers didn't make the playoffs that year.
That's vintage Kobe, man. That's an awesome moment and something I'm sure that you'll remember for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Trav, I got one more from my end, and then I'm going to let Chief wrap it up for us. Sure. This is something that, like Preston just mentioned, we love to ask everyone that we have on the show when they talk about their media careers. Now they've gotten to this point. I have a question for you around the landscape of sports media right now. I'd love to hear your take on the shape of the industry. And what I mean by that specifically is what you see being considered content, what you see in terms of the economics, the industry, the jobs that are available, what is making headlines and what is being phased out. What is your overall kind of temperature check on the industry right now in terms of the content that's being emphasized, the jobs that are being phased out, what is being considered sports media and what really isn't, et cetera. And this is, again, this is something we talk about all the time. So I just love to hear your thoughts on where sports media as an industry is right now.
Yeah. From what I see is that there isn't a separation between print journalism and, you know, photojournalism and television and radio. It's all just kind of mixed together now. And social media. You know, when I first got into the business, Facebook didn't exist. Twitter didn't exist. MySpace was around, if you guys are, you know, if you remember that. But nobody.
We were in middle school for that.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for making me feel better about it. but that didn't really exist, right? Like, stations had websites that they never really updated. Nobody streamed anything. Now you're even seeing some teams, I know the LA Kings and the NHL, they don't have a terrestrial radio station. At least they didn't a year or two ago. Everything was streaming for them. And the younger people that are coming up in this business are more valuable in a lot of ways because all of that stuff, you know, like I can use Twitter. I'm not great at it, but I can use it. I use Instagram, but like TikTok, Snapchat, all that stuff. Like, I have no idea how any of that works. And someone who has lived that and grew up with it, that's becoming such a big part of things. And like, we make fun of the term influencers, right? But there is a place for that in sports media, because if you're trying to drive eyeballs, that's a way to do it, right? And, you know, I got like 5,000 followers on Twitter. I work with people that have 20,000 followers on Twitter that don't have as high of a profile job as I do. I've got like 1,000 followers on Instagram, same thing. And they know how to work those things better. So the people who have the jobs that are either in their 20s or right around 30 that are proficient and really good at social media, but also know what they're talking about and know how to know what content to put out there on the social media channels, that's become such a huge, huge part of it. Like, I see other radio stations around the country. I'm like, why didn't I think of that? You know, like our radio show is on TV now, and there's synergy there with NBC Sports Northwest. It's tough because there's still that element of old school journalism that needs to be there, but that gap is getting closer and closer. And I think there, and I don't mean to speak poorly about people who are just starting out or haven't been in the business for very long, but there's a reason why reporters that have been around a long time are able to break the stories and the news that they are, because they've built relationships with general managers, with players, you know, like Dwight James with NBC Sports Northwest or Chris Haynes, right? Chris Haynes has been in the business a long time, and he's built relationships, and Woj has built relationships that just somebody who's sitting at home in charge of social media isn't going to be able to do, right? Mm-hmm. So there are different things that matter and that are important. And when they come together and someone is able to put all of those things together, and that's about as valuable as you can get. And stations all across the country, TV and radio, are finding fewer people to do more things. So you better be able to do everything.
Mm-hmm. Final question for me, kind of wrapping up something that you were hitting on there. And it's something I've thought of for a long time, because I think it is important, if you can, to be good at Twitter and be good at Instagram. But at the same time, as someone who's pursuing a play-by-play career or a TV career as well, I also think to myself half the time, like, damn, dude, like, just because myself or a different person doesn't have a great social following doesn't mean they're not a good broadcaster. Like, there's a massive difference between having Twitter followers and being a really good broadcaster. I know people, and that's not to say they're exclusive. Like, of course, there are people out there who have both, And I like some of the one of the best broadcasters I know who's my age is a guy named Ryan Roulard. The guy has like no Twitter follow, no social follow. Yeah. And he's a sensational play-by-play voice. And so it has really nothing to do with his actual broadcasting skill.
Right.
So I'm curious, like, where's the balance there? Or is there even really a balance necessary? I think, you know, kind of the conversation that I'm getting at.
No, I do. And look, play-by-play is in its own category from everything else. Mm-hmm. So you think about it, in professional sports, there is about, 120 radio jobs? And about 90 TV jobs, because the NFL doesn't have local TV broadcasters, right? So there's in the ballpark of 200 or so play-by-play jobs. A lot of those jobs are filled for a long, long, long time. Maybe between all the sports combined, you get 5 or 6 a year that turn over. And you've got young broadcasters everywhere, right? And then you've got minor league jobs. You've got college jobs all over the place. And for some people, the college job is what they want to do. But for the people who want to do play-by-play but want to have a fallback plan and aren't completely dedicating themselves just to that, and like myself, I wanted to do play-by-play. That's what I wanted to do, and that's what I moved out to Oregon for. But I didn't see the path for me to get where I am now. It just happened to fall into place that way. So I went down the path of doing talk radio. And like I was saying before, that stuff didn't come into play then, but it does now. And it's so much harder to get into talk radio because from what I've noticed is that you don't see people bouncing from market to market anymore. You don't start out in, you know, market 150 and move up to market 125 to market 100 like you can do in you know, TV news and TV sports. That doesn't happen as often. And I noticed that when I was looking for jobs that I was more than qualified for, I wasn't getting considered for those because I wasn't local, right? More and more places are hiring from within. So if you start out as an intern and you work your way up to producer or board op or whatever, you've got a better chance of eventually being a host at that station, especially if you can do all those other things, than someone who has been doing it for 15 years that wants to move to another market. Because they want people who, A, they know, and B, that they know that market. So it's a lot harder to bounce around and work your way up like I tried to do. And I was fortunate enough to stay at the same station for 10 years before I left and then eventually came back. And by the time I was out of work in Portland, I had been here for 12 years and I was considered a local at that point. So there are similarities with all that stuff, but there's also a lot of individual things that are important to whatever medium you choose. There's just more synergy with all those mediums now than there was even 5 years ago.
Well, listen, kids, you could be calling a seaside football game, and a couple years later, you're an NBA play-by-play voice. I've known Travis for a long time, and dude, it's awesome to see your success. And thanks for coming
Appreciate it.
And Blazers starting in 2 nights against the Jazz in, I think that's at home, right? Is that an empty Moda Center?
Yep.
Empty Moda Center. Is that going to be weird?
Well, we did some preseason games that way, and it was kind of weird. But once you start calling the game, it's not as weird. You still have that same energy from the fans. There's crowd noise. There's music. There's that stuff. It's weirder to call the road games from Moda Center off of a monitor.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I remember you did that for the bubble, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now it's what we're doing for road games. We're not traveling. So for road games, we're in the same spot we are for home games. It's good, though, because it means I get to see my kids more.
And you know what I've noticed too on the TV feed is they share that feed with the national with the network. So like the NBC Sports Northwest feed is the exact same feed that you'll see on ESPN.
Right, there's one camera crew. So if it's a national game, like TNT games are exclusive, but if it's a national, like if it's ESPN and the game's on in Portland and Utah and ESPN, they're all sharing cameras, and I think you know they can have like one or two cameras that are dedicated to them, but everything else is literally exactly the same feed.
Wait, so if it's a TNT game, then there's no NBC Sports Northwest broadcast?
Yep, TNTs are exclusive.
Gotcha. Cool. All right, Travis. Hey, thanks for coming on, man. We really appreciate the time. You're a busy man traveling. Well, not traveling at the moment, but often traveling, and a couple new kids back at your home as well. So thanks for coming on.
Always, guys. Anytime. I appreciate you.